Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Let's do it. You had a little bit more oomph in that intro. just came in with the energy on
making
that.
Making up for last week.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And the grumbleness.
So basically, since, you know, you were unable to talk as much as you usually do, just go ahead and I'll just sit here. Just ramble. Go ahead.
All right. So, we've really gotten to the point where we were pretty much set on the fact that the Cubs win was a total fluke.
All right, calm down.
Oh, look at that! Somebody wants to talk all of a sudden.
All right, you can get out of here with that. All right, so Survivor Series weekend.
Yes.
Where do we even begin? I mean, there's the one major thing.
Let's just talk about Goldberg.
Yeah.
There's no point like. You're just going to wait until we talk about Goldberg, So let's just talk about Goldberg.
So Goldberg beats Brock Lesnar in a minute and a half. And then, you know, the next night he announces that he's going to be in the Royal Rumble in January. Presumably, probably, I assume Brock Lesnar is going to cost him the Royal Rumble leading to a WrestleMania match, one can assume.
One can assume.
But then again, they surprised the crap out of us with this minute and a half match. So who knows what they're going to do now. But I would assume this isn't the last time that we're going to see Brock versus Goldberg.
No.
Especially with the way that that match went.
Yeah.
Just thoughts on any of this? Because I was laughing hysterically when this happened.
I really enjoyed it. You know what? I was sports entertained.
You were sports entertained. Because it, like, I think Neil was the one that, like, right before it happened, just kind of, like, mentioned it, like, hey, wouldn't this be funny if they just, if this was just a squash match and Goldberg just, you know, beat the mess out of him? And then it happened. But it was one of those things where, like, we didn't think it was anywhere on WWE's radar to even consider doing something like this. And then they did it.
I know this gets into the whole back and forth we have with Trashy for the past several weeks, but I think they made the right call here because we have a situation now where it's like, I don't know where they go from here.
Uh-huh.
I guess I'll have to watch the next show to find out where they go from here. Where they go from here might be stupid.
Sure.
There's a solid chance of that happening, but I don't know, and I want to know, so now I have to watch the product.
All right, and so now, after listening to that, and yes, that is a very reasonable conclusion to come to, I'm now going to put on the Q hat and respond as Q would. Yeah, you're just a Lesnar mark. Stop marking out. You Lesnar apologist.
Clearly not a Lesnar mark. I'm saying,
I know what you said. I'm still playing the part of Q. Q, you got to calm down with all that stuff, man. Like, because our thread has kind of turned into, like Q just, I don't know. He just kind of just firing on all cylinders when any one of us has any sort of, like, leniency towards one or the other. So yeah, you're a Lesnar apologist.
All right.
I don't know where to go from there either. So what they did here, I feel like they added a level of intrigue. I can go ahead and say it. That minute and a half match, a billion times better than the match 12 years ago.
Goldberg at some point,
mm-hmm,
in an interview, somewhere in those 12 years, gave an interview about the crux of the thing was somebody was talking about, like, he wasn't a good wrestler.
Sure.
And he talked about, when I am in the ring, everybody is standing and cheering. Why would I do anything to sedate that?
Right.
And if my wrestling ability runs the risk of sedating that,
right,
why would I do that?
Right. And that's him admitting what wouldn't work for him.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly his ability is, you know, power moves that, you know, gets people excited. Not, you know, the technical wrestling moves where people can just kind of, like, sit in awe.
Power moves that look exciting.
Right. And honestly, that's him embracing what works for him, you know? And I can't really, as much as I love, you know, the technical aspect of professional wrestling, I can't really fault a guy for knowing his strengths and playing it up to get to garner a reaction from the crowd.
I think there is room for both on a card.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So now we know that Lesnar is going to at least be at the Rumble and be in the Rumble.
Goldberg
is going to do all that. Yes, the obvious line is Brock interferes and we get a Brock Goldberg rematch.
Right.
Not really what I'd be looking forward to.
No. Because this means, you know, their next match is going to be probably longer. And that's usually where their matches kind of fall apart.
Well, I'm interested in what Brock does now.
Sure.
For the first time in a year or more.
Honestly, I was half expecting Raw to kind of turn into the day after WrestleMania 31.
Where is Angry Brock? Yeah.
Where Lesnar just kind of went, you know, bulls on parade.
And Lesnar is not suddenly the comical throwaway jobber.
No.
The next guy that beats Lesnar will still be impressive. It'll still be a exciting moment. It'll still be a feather in a guy's cap.
Right.
It's
like, you know, Conor McGregor lost the fight, okay? Does that mean we're less interested in any of his fights that come after that? Absolutely not. We've seen, you know, two, three matches ago of his that he lost? And, you know, the next couple matches are just as big. People are just as hyped about it. I mean, like, Ronda Rousey's coming back from a loss. People are getting hyped about that. And I know those are, you know, kind of apples and oranges, but at the same time, you know, the aura that's built around a WWE superstar, wrestler, whatever you want to call him, it doesn't necessarily have to take a hit if they lose.
I don't think
so. Now, if they string together a bunch of losses, then yeah, you know, we saw Bray Wyatt lose a little bit of luster because he was losing every big rivalry he had for a while. And some would say he probably still is in that rut. And so, yeah, you can definitely take a hit. I don't think this is big enough of a hit to...
No, Brock...
Unless you really sit back and dissect it, it's like, yeah, he just lost to a guy that hasn't wrestled in 12 years. Fine. But it's still, like, in just the WWE kayfabe, like, it's Goldberg. He's on a different tier.
He is, and people don't age in kayfabe. Right. You just get more powerful as you go. I mean, in kayfabe, Undertaker is, you know, this is not an old man that is struggling to, you know, go throughout his daily life. He is a top tier, powerful, godlike entity.
Yep.
I would say, like, in kayfabe, the leg drop is still the most, Hulk Hogan's leg drop is still the most devastating move.
True.
In the world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right.
So I don't have a problem with, you know, in kayfabe, this guy, yes, he is an older dude. Yes, he hasn't wrestled for 12 years, but he is this.
And he could probably put on maybe a 10-15 minute match, probably tops, if that. We don't know because we only got a minute and a half of him just, you know, pedal to the metal.
It was a little bit funny on Raw when he mentioned, he's like, yeah, I had to train 6 to 7 weeks for this match. I want to thank my wife for sitting in. It's like, 6 to 7 weeks?
Yeah.
Did you not know it was going to be a 90-second match?
Yeah. No. Like, yeah, I did strike that one as odd. Was there... surely there's other stuff from Survivor Series that weekend we should touch on.
I want to make special mention of the men's Survivor Series match.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was fantastic. I thought that was a...
I thought it was a definitely a big highlight of the night.
I think it's a match of the year contender, especially if you want to separate singles matches versus cluster matches or multiple men matches. I think that is a match of the year contender. I think that's what happens when you have a four-hour card with six matches on it.
Yeah. It's
go out, take the time you need.
Yeah, because it was a
build
long...
the match that you need. The match passed an hour.
Right.
And it helped that there were 10 people involved in it. But it was a good, long, entertaining match.
Yeah. Now, it was one of those matches where we knew it was going to be long, and we got through it, like, even halfway through it. You know, it had been a while, but you don't really feel it. They held my attention the entire time. I didn't really feel like it was a chore for a match that long, which is usually the case when they try to stretch something out that long. Typically because they're trying to fill the last hour of WrestleMania with Triple H versus Roman Reigns, but that's whatever. That was a definite highlight for me. SmackDown getting the win, beating Roman. And I love how they had the, cause I'm not blaming Michael Cole, cause I know he's just saying what is being yelled at in his earpiece. I love the fact that they've still got the gall to be like, Toronto is, just crazy town or whatever they call it, because they're booing Roman. It's like a bizarro world or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, there's nothing specific to Toronto. You still hate the guy, and you're just, and it's one of those things where it's like you still get that little twinge that you haven't quite learned that lesson yet. And I know you had stated something along the lines of like maybe this is them like kind of dipping their toes in that water again to see if it's safe to put Roman like in a high profile position at WrestleMania again.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was a resounding no, unless they completely believe that Toronto is Bizarro Land, which they shouldn't.
I do not think, if I were to give advice to WWE, Roman will not get the response you want until he turns heel and face again.
Right.
He has to go through those steps in the journey to get him to where you want. And you are trying to skip that step, and you resolutely refuse to do that. And as long as that is the case, you'll never get to that point.
And
I will say that having taking your foot off the Roman gas pedal a little bit, it helped that he was, suspended for 30 days.
Sure.
But then kind of he hasn't but looked at the, WWE title once.
Right.
Since Kevin Owens got it.
Right.
He's all down on the mid-tier title. He was barely on Raw this week.
Yeah.
So it's not the Roman Reigns show.
Right.
And
it's one of those things
that
where
that helps.
Yeah, and it, I think WWE, I feel like these past few months should have been eye-opening to see exactly how little they need to depend on Roman.
Uh-huh.
Especially now they've got all these superstars back that had been injured around WrestleMania season. You can build a show on Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, and Seth Rollins, and numerous others. You don't have to rely on them like you think you do.
Yeah.
You got New Day just selling merch out of nowhere, and I promise you the main reason that they're not turning him heel is because they think that, or they believe that his merch sales are crucial.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as crucial as they want it to be.
They are.
I don't understand why. I just don't understand the fixation on, or I should say, the stubbornness on keeping him face.
The thing that I hope comes out of the brand split, which is coming out, but I hope that this continues with strength, is due to the fixation on which roster is better, this roster versus that roster, that there will be a build of both of the rosters as a set of wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
We've always said you should have a group of half dozen or so where any one of them could be a believable champion at any given time.
Right.
The title should, ricochet around this group of people rather than this top tier guy
and everybody else trying to make it.
Right, yeah.
The John Cena, the Hulk Hogan that we've had, you know, for years and years, where you have this one top guy and there's nothing, there's no question who the top guy is. Whereas other eras where you have six guys and people have their favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But any one of these guys could have the title. Any one of these guys could main event WrestleMania without it feeling weird. But I see all the pieces in place for that. And Roman should be one of those six guys for Raw. There's right. no reason why that shouldn't be the case.
Yeah.
As far as talent and ring presence, et cetera, are concerned. But when you have Roman, Seth, Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, Finn Balor when he comes back.
Yeah.
Like you have this group of guys, any one of them should be able to be a viable champion.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot for, like, Big Cass or Enzo
mm-hmm.
to be a dark horse but contender kind of guy. No,
and I mean,
same
like,
with Big E.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw Big Cass, like, you know, granted it was a very quick moment, but in that Fatal 4-Way where he was put in, you know, a championship match where we were all kind of pleasantly surprised that he kind of held his own.
Mm-hmm.
He's still pretty atrocious on the mic, but it's... You know, he's coming along.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, in the ring, we saw that he could hold his own. I think, honestly, I think that Raw is going to need some top heels here in a little bit. Because now, you know, Seth's turned face.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Kevin Owens as Chris Jericho, but we feel like Chris Jericho is going to turn face any day now.
The second those guys go at each other,
mm-hmm.
one of them will have to turn face.
Right.
I hope that doesn't happen until post-WrestleMania. I think you should milk this friendship. Same way I felt about New Day. And milk it till I hate it.
Right. And I feel like, I don't know. Like, I did like that they kind of swerved us a little bit on Raw
with
Jericho. Like, I really enjoyed that. So basically, whenever that happens, I'm just assuming that they're going to turn Jericho, because I feel like that's an easier turn right now, because he's already over as a face, as it is.
Right.
But he's just still a heel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so then your top heels on Raw are Kevin Owens and Rusev. You know, and Rusev right now is getting really hot and bothered over Enzo's junk.
Yeah.
I like the backstage segment was pretty funny. I'm not so sure what the squash match does. I mean, we'll see. But
yeah, this feels like somebody in the writers room had a really good pitch.
Right.
And it just got noted not to death, but to like a left skew that I don't know. I don't think was the original vision.
Maybe. I don't know. I felt like Enzo, I think he did a pretty good job with what he was given there.
Enzo is the definition of being able to do a pretty good job with what he's given.
Right. I do love the nice little subtle jab when he walked by Titus and he said no pictures. That's like a really deep cut inside joke. But it's a deep cut, and I appreciated that. I'm not sure if that was intentional or not.
I don't know, because I think that you could have also done that with Seth Rollins.
True.
I would have, if I was doing it.
But Seth Rollins is much higher up on the food chain, so I don't know if I would have even gone there.
So, I don't know. You might be looking into a little much.
Maybe.
But
still.
I get where you're coming from.
Yeah. Let's the females, they had their Survivor Series match.
It was a good match.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nia Jax honestly came out looking the best.
Yeah.
This was the first time. This was the first time that they of show don't tell, as far as she's a monster and the whole division right. should be scared.
Yeah, I will say the Raw shirt over her gear looked really dumb.
Yes. Yes, it
just
did.
You know, we are class of ring attire. We've got to comment on these things.
Yes, it did. It was a bad call. It did not look good.
And on the men's side, like, a lot of them, like, kept the Raw or SmackDown shirts on.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I'm glad Bray didn't. He just kind of did, like, the
towel thing?
Had it as a towel. Because he had that SmackDown shirt on the run-in last week, and it looked pretty dumb.
Yeah.
But I'm glad for that.
I will say I really liked, I know a lot of people hated it, I really liked that everybody got individual ring entrances.
Yeah.
Partially because, again, 4-hour show.
And a lot of them, like, you know, they didn't go down the whole ramp, so it doesn't take as much time.
Right, right. But I was terrified we were going to get individual ring entrances for the men's thing, and then we'll just play the SmackDown and Raw theme song and they could all enter together.
Right.
On the women's thing. So I liked that these matches were treated on a similar level to each other.
Yeah.
And I like getting to see the ring entrance. The ring entrances are part of the show for me. And I like getting
absolutely.
To
it's part of the presentation.
That. Exactly.
But ultimately, Raw ended up getting the win, and then Charlotte attacked Bayley after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was just yesterday. I don't remember what the backlash was on Raw the next day on that.
We end up with a Sasha and Bayley tag team match against Nia Jax and Charlotte.
Right.
I do like, and Raw did a very good job. SmackDown did a good job with this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe it's just like, I didn't expect this out of Raw, so I'm very proud of Raw.
Right.
But a lot of the show was focused on genuine fallout
right.
from Survivor yeah. Series. This happened as Survivor Series, and I'm reacting to this thing that
there
happened.
Were a lot of consequences.
Yes, and it gave the show a real focus and a real drive.
Yeah,
that was a good through line through the entire 3 hours. So much of Raw is like variety hour. Now it's time for this act. Now it's time for this act,
mm-hmm.
Which makes is part of the reason the show feels so long and drags so much.
Right,
it's just this inconsistent, randomized, spin the roulette wheel kind of feel to the structure of the show.
Right.
And having the large portion of the show be focused on, I mean, the Sheamus and Cesaro got their match because of their success
right.
at Survivor Series. Mm-hmm. The Charlotte, the whole women's setup was a fallout from their actions on Sunday.
Right.
And so having this, like, you get to kind of go through, oh, here are all the actions, and now we check those off,
mm-hmm.
knowing where we're headed with this show.
Yeah.
So take note of that. This was one of the, because of that, this was one of the better shows. This was a pretty standard average Raw,
mm.
but because of that through line and that consistency,
this show had direction.
It elevated the yeah. show as a whole, as a piece.
Yeah.
Of as a product.
And speaking of, you know, consequences coming out of Survivor Series, you had Sami Zayn, who had lost, you know, again, no fault of his own, but he lost to Miz for the Intercontinental Championship.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next night they did that, the match against Braun Strowman. And honestly, I love Sami Zayn. I want him to be successful. But I did like that segment. It plays up the sympathetic face that Sami Zayn is amazing at.
Right.
This is kind of laying the groundwork for it. So, so you get the match that kind of continued for, an uncomfortably long amount of time.
Yeah.
Then you had Mick Foley come out in a very subdued, like, just, you know, just in the match. You know, it elevated the seriousness of the situation. Even, like, something as small as, you know, referring to the referee as by his first name, like Chad, in the match. You know, that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you could tell that Mick Foley wasn't necessarily on board with punishing Sammy, but he realized that, okay, that's enough punishment. We can end
yeah.
it now.
I was going into this match ready to crap all over the idea because Sami Zayn was specifically asking for this match 2 or 3 weeks ago or whatever.
Sure,
he was like,
right,
I'm
yeah.
the only one that will fight him.
Yeah.
And so then when Stephanie's like, we'll do this as punishment. And I'm like, that's what he was asking for. That's not how
right.
punishment works.
But we did have, you know, kind of a consistency of character because he didn't back down from it.
Right,
he was
right.
like, all right, I'll
but
do it.
I was going into it like, ha, that's stupid, inconsistent Raw. And then like, sure. but as that match went on, I'm like, oh, I'm getting
yeah.
uncomfortable. This is
yeah.
this is some solid punishment
yeah.
that's happening.
And like I said, I felt like, you know, the way Mick Foley came out and ended the match, I thought that was a perfect punctuation on that segment as a whole.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like hopefully this lays the groundwork, you know, to have Sami Zayn have something to build on that yeah. isn't Kevin Owens related.
I think that would be really good. So
also let me just say, I don't know if it's just the fact that he had his jacket closed, like, you know, buttoned, but Mick Foley's looking tiny. Like, it makes it like, and, you know, clearly he's getting himself healthier, and I wish nothing but the best for him, but he's looking pretty tiny, and I mean that in the biggest compliment ever.
Yeah.
It's making me kind of jealous.
Well, he's probably aware of the fact that he's got to be on TV every week.
That, well, yeah, that, and, you know, he's needs to do it for his health because he's got a lot of, you know, joint issues, and carrying so much weight on those joints is just making it worse.
Yeah.
So.
But I want to say, like, I'm really pleased with the direction Raw specifically seems to be headed post Survivor Series.
Right. And SmackDown was SmackDown has a different hill to climb because they have consequences from Survivor Series as well as, you know, going ahead and booking their pay-per-view that's in 2 weeks.
Right.
So they've got, you know, they had a little bit more of a urgency to their
purpose. And I don't want me heaping compliments on Raw to detract anything from SmackDown. Sure. SmackDown is already like the top kid in the class, so it's like, sure, I don't need to spend as much time marveling at its success. Yeah. But I do like that because TLC is, you know, so soon after Survivor Series, I like we've had this feud between Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles for quite a while right now.
Yeah.
I feel like we got to be getting close to the end. TLC feels like a culmination point for me.
Yeah.
Having said that, I've been really impressed that I am not tired of this match yet.
Yeah.
I've seen them fight several times. I'm not tired. I'm excited to see them go at it again at TLC. But part of the reason is they weren't weirdly buddy-buddy 2 weeks before. I'm assuming they're going to have their most vicious and, you know, prop-heavy, stunt-heavy match.
Sure.
So I like the fact that they couldn't get along. I like the fact that they couldn't hold it together for the sake of the show.
Yeah.
So what we have now is a what I would assume is a final match, a final confrontation.
Sure.
Which now I'm looking forward to.
Right.
I'm expecting this to be the final throwdown, the final beatdown, the thing that needs tables, ladders, and chairs to determine the ultimate winner of this feud.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, it doesn't feel like we're cramming all of our feuding, all of our buildup into 2 weeks. It feels like it's, you know, building off of what's happening. The same thing goes with, like, Baron Corbin and Kalisto.
Yeah.
They're going to have a match at TLC, but it has started, you know, at Survivor Series and a little bit before Survivor
Series. Sure, yeah.
So I'm very, very impressed that it is very apparent they were booking with an eye to the future already.
Yeah, absolutely.
As ever since Payback, probably.
Yeah.
Or before. So, yeah, SmackDown's doing a good job.
Yeah, I agree. They set more matches for TLC. They set up a ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship with Miz and Dolph again, but they've said that this will be it.
Yeah.
You know, Dolph still has his rematch from when he lost championship last week. I totally forgot about that. And they also set up a no DQ match between Nikki Bella and Carmella. Interesting, I thought. Also set up a championship match between Becky and Alexa Bliss.
Yeah.
There's no stipulation there that I know of yet.
No, one's not been announced.
No. And a chair match between Kalisto and Baron Corbin.
So we are missing a tables match.
We are missing a tables match.
We have a ladder, we have a TLC, we have a chairs, but we are missing a tables match.
I don't know. That could come with the tag team championship because they haven't set that in stone yet. They had a whatever. I don't even know what they called it. Just one, a bunch of tag team.
Oh, the kerfuffle thing?
Yes. But it will set up for a number one contender match next week versus American Alpha versus Bray and Randy Orton.
I do have to point out that there was no Undertaker.
There was no Undertaker.
There was, I believe, no mention of Undertaker.
Nope.
So Undertaker's being back full time.
He's 0-1 on his I'm back.
All right.
Zero. What was the phrase that he used? The
digging holes and digging graves, and I don't remember. Digging holes and burying souls.
Yeah,
something like that.
He is 0-1 on digging holes. maybe he's prepping by watching Holes on Netflix now. I don't know. So yeah, no Undertaker. So, but then again, the men won, although SmackDown overall lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he probably should have done something.
Yeah.
And I did make the joke as soon as they lost their match at Survivor Series, I was like, man, Undertaker is going to tombstone so many of SmackDown's women roster.
So I do also want to...
Thanks for no-selling my joke there, bud. Thank you.
I gave it the gravitas it deserved.
By not laughing.
Several seconds of awkward silence.
Yes.
So the listener can laugh to themselves.
Sure. All right, Editor Neil. Hey, hi, this is Chris. If you could put a laugh track whenever I say that joke, thank you very much. You're doing great at your job. Thank you.
Yes, that was the Big Bang Theory of jokes.
Oh, you know how to hit a low blow.
So, on Talking Smack this week,
mm-hmm.
they talked about Goldberg and Raw and Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
Even though that's a Raw match, but whatever, la-di-da.
Sure.
Because it was also a more than regular match.
Sure.
Whatever.
Well, you know this because on Goldberg's like little nameplate when he came out on Monday Night Raw, it was not a Raw nameplate. It was a WWE 2K17 nameplate.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah. I thought that was like, all right, you guys aren't even trying to hide it anymore.
That feels a little dirty, doesn't it?
It feels super dirty. Like, I don't smoke, but I almost needed a cigarette after that one.
Daniel Bryan talked about the failure of management, and he used himself as the management.
Right. It wasn't like, you know, the management is failing. He included himself on that.
The failure of being able to build stars mm-hmm. that are the caliber of Goldberg.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
Partially because, I don't know, like, yeah, Daniel Bryan is general manager, but he plays the character of the general manager on SmackDown.
He's not the one
power
he's not
he
actually
has
making
for
calls,
star
yeah.
making.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as he says, this is my fault as management, how much is that, you know, true, and how much is that him getting away with saying, management's dropping the ball here?
Yeah, I think it was kind of his veiled way of saying that, but not wanting to really cause up a stir. And notice he didn't like list anyone in particular of like people that he feels like should be better off, because I feel like if he did that in that context, it would have just created more headaches for that particular superstar.
Yeah,
you know, Cesaro.
Cesaro was the exact example. Is like, do you think Stone Cold has hurt Cesaro's career by suggesting Vince is wrong for not pushing him to the moon
and then call him out on his network?
Yeah,
for it? I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised if it did.
Knowing Vince, I feel like that's very, very possible.
So I guess that's a very spiteful thing to do, and Vince has kind of been known to be a spiteful prick from time to time. So I did think that was very interesting, but I liked the way that he worded it as to, you know, to take the blame, because no loyal WWE fan that cheers for all the good guys is going to really blame Daniel Bryan for it. They're like, no, you tried your, like, they're going to have that, like, they're not going to boo Daniel Bryan because of it. So him kind of like taking the heat, but still saying what needs to be said.
I
thought it was good.
I think that Goldberg has the unfair advantage of nostalgia backing him up.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, you get the right person 12 years into the future,
yep.
when Kevin Owens pops up, or
whoever, mm-hmm. I think they will be the, why can't we have guys today that get that kind of reaction? That being said, the biggest reactions in the world were in the Attitude Era.
Sure.
Nothing has yet to rival Stone Cold helping Mick Foley win.
Right.
But the closest thing that it came to was Dolph Ziggler cashing in, and you did nothing with that.
Yep.
So
they, you know, they have those moments where, you know, you have these big moments for guys that the fans connect with and believe in, and the follow up is just fumbled. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's one of those things where you can't really. I don't hold it, you know, any particular superstar to blame. Like in Dolph Ziggler's instance, I certainly don't blame him.
I blame
a little bit of Jack Swagger for, you know, concussing him, but that's a different story.
The other thing is, like, I don't know what else Ziggler can do. I don't know where, sure, I can be like, Ziggler, absolutely, you should have.
Yeah, but the vast majority of the blame in that particular circumstance lies on, you know, management.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that way about a lot of things, or about a lot of cases. Cesaro and Sheamus are trying to make this tag team thing work, to the best of their ability. I still think it's a dumb move. It may be paying off a little bit for them now, but
they are.
I still don't like it at all.
They are making it work despite itself.
Right.
And I will...
And this is one of those things where I feel like this benefits Sheamus way more than it benefits Cesaro.
This is not something you will hear me say often, and I want to word it carefully.
Sheamus is your favorite superstar of all time?
Sheamus has the talent and the ability and the drive to succeed in this business.
Mm-hmm.
And become a lasting, memorable legacy. He has been booked horrendously.
Yes.
He has, on top of that horrendous booking, acted through it horrendously himself.
Yes.
So it is not, Sheamus is not a blameless victim of bad booking. Sheamus has taken bad booking and done crap with it. Sheamus has taken good booking and done crap with it.
Yes. Lipschitz delivery aside, yes, he's had nothing but bad acting.
Well, going way back to my, like, specific let's just crap on Sheamus week, where the diatribe of
around the time of the strap match, I do believe, yes.
It was... I don't remember when this
but was. It was.
I don't remember when this was. But it was when he was a face, and when he was close to a top face of SmackDown.
Yes. It was when he had the feud with Del Rio for, like, it felt like almost 6 months.
But he would enter through his ring entrance, you knew if he was booked to win or not.
Yeah.
And that's bad. That's being a bad sports entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a lot of issues with going through the motions if he's stuck in something that he doesn't like.
Yeah.
And that, you know, kind of leads to a cycle of him being in, you know, some crappy booking and knowing it's crappy booking and not doing it. Because Dolph Ziggler is the polar opposite example of, here's some garbage booking.
Yeah.
And he makes it shine.
Yeah.
That being said, Sheamus is doing some good things here. Sheamus working with Cesaro. I think being forced to work with Cesaro is forcing Sheamus to step up his game and doing things to the best of his Sheamus ability. Cesaro is being dragged down.
Yeah.
So it is definitely a more talented, higher caliber talent and a less caliber talent being forced to meet in the middle.
Yeah.
But I do think Cesaro is pulling Sheamus up more than Sheamus is dragging Cesaro down.
Yeah.
Which is technically a net gain for Raw.
Sure.
But just let Cesaro skyrocket to where he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You keep their own weights on them.
I agree. I agree. I'm ready for them to work out some sort of trade for him to go to SmackDown.
Yeah.
It needs to happen. Which, I mean, ultimately, like, I don't think they really, like, you know, storyline aside, I don't think they want Baron Corbin all that badly. So, in Stephanie's kayfabe eyes, Cesaro for Baron Corbin, in her eyes, is probably a one-to-one trade. So, I say go ahead and make it.
I don't think it will happen before the draft.
Next year.
Assuming that there is a draft next year.
Yeah.
But if that is the case, I feel like the draft will almost be entirely centered around will Cesaro go to SmackDown.
Yeah.
Because that's the biggest thing right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it'll be like a lottery type of draft? Like, just, you know.
I hope not.
Yeah.
That never...
I just don't know how else they would do, like, other than shaking up their entire roster, which I don't feel like would be a great idea, especially, like, all these established entities now on SmackDown and Raw, just to just kind of rip them up and just move them to a new show all out of nowhere, I feel like would probably be a big mistake if you just completely reshuffle everything.
Yeah. I never liked the... You know, random, somebody's going, spin the roulette to find out who.
Because there's going to be one person that they switch just to get a big surprise, but not really have a plan.
Yeah, there's always that. It always feels, it feels meaningless and directionless.
Yeah.
And if you're going to stick with the, this show is trying to outdo this show.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as, like, Daniel Bryan and Shane, Mick Foley and Stephanie, they are two competing entities trying to put on a good show.
Yeah.
That is their job, is to put on a good show.
And so,
to just be like, here's the card you dealt, figure it out.
Sure.
Takes away the most interesting aspect of that is the strategy of building a good roster.
Mm-hmm.
And so just take that away and give it to a roulette wheel, takes away all of that process.
If they just, like, maybe just rename it and not even have it be a draft, but just some sort of, like, transaction night where, you know, if you're going to make any sort of trade, do it now. And it's also where they might draft up some, you know, people from NXT,
mm-hmm.
where that would be, like, the only draft aspect of it. I'd be okay with that.
Well, I would be very interested to see, like, okay, Raw and SmackDown each get a steal. And maybe, like, you know, there's a match in the middle of the night. And they get, whoever wins the match, that team gets an extra steal.
Right.
But that's a different thing of Shane or Daniel Bryan consciously deciding, I want that guy because that guy can do good things for my show.
Right.
Is different than, we won, let's see who we get. Because then it was like, oh, it was JR.
Right.
We got JR. There's this, like...
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's... I want to see more deliberate things done with the draft.
Yeah.
As we look forward to next summer.
Sure. We need to talk about NXT TakeOver.
Yes.
NXT TakeOver. Have you had a chance to watch it? You didn't have a chance.
I didn't get to watch it live. I watched highlights because I had the...
Because I know you've been super busy since then. Mm-hmm. So I halfway was expecting you to not have been able to watch it. That's completely okay. Overall, really good show.
Yep.
Match of the night would have to be DIY versus Revival, the 2 out of 3 falls. A lot of people are giving it, you know, match of the year contendership. Mm-hmm. I'm considering it. I'm not sure if I want to give it. I don't know if I want to say that that's my match of the year just yet. But it is, out of all the matches that we've seen those two teams go off against each other, this one is the best, I feel like.
That's how you do a tag team match.
Yes.
And we talk about how, you know, NXT's rebuilding the women's division. Now mm-hmm. NXT's rebuilding the tag team division.
Yeah.
Rebuilding the tag team division, because tag team wrestling is different than singles wrestling.
Yeah.
Rebuilding the tag team division isn't just having more good tag teams.
Mm-hmm.
It is constructing matches that are tag team matches, not... two guys who happen to take turns singles matches,
mm-hmm.
which is what so many tag team matches are.
Right.
And the easy solution is to just tornado tag is now the standard.
Sure.
I
kind that that's what I would prefer.
Right.
But that's not going to happen.
No.
So there's a lot more work, a lot more subtle. It's a lot harder. It's missed a lot more often. This is an example of when it works. This is a tag team. This felt like two guys working together to beat two other guys who were working together as a team.
I remember the last NXT TakeOver prior to this, the last time they had a tag team championship match, we had, you know, our friends that were there that occasionally watch wrestling but not necessarily fans. They kept complaining about how Revival kept interfering and then kept getting in the way. It was like, this is getting frustrating. I'm getting tired of this. I'm like, yeah, that's because they're bad guys. They're heels. Like, you're agitated. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it so well, and they come up with like one or two of their, you know, interruptions or whatever is just something new that we haven't. You know, they'll throw in some favorites in there.
What's impressive is there's a feeling of tag team strategy.
Yeah,
we have. It feels like it genuinely feels like in NXT. These guys are watching tapes of these guys.
Yeah.
There is strategy to be studied.
Yeah.
And that's just really refreshing, because so often, you know, Michael Cole is forced to talk about the strategy in the ring.
Sure.
Look at the strategy that's being employed. And you're like, strategies, I'm going to punch them hard. Yeah. Like, that's not really strategy. And so to see that develop in a tag team setting is very exciting and very impressive.
I'm going to go ahead and call it now. And this is kind of me throwing my hat over the wall. And you know how much we like that. We appreciate that here on Class Ring Attire.
Yes, we do.
I'm going to say it now. The Revival will get a call up. I don't know. I'm not going to say when. I don't know when. But I will say they will be the tag team that dethrones New Day.
Really?
Uh-huh.
All right.
Because in my eyes, it's either them or Gallows and Anderson.
All right. That's interesting.
Uh-huh.
Very interesting.
Especially with, you know, New Day is kind of getting back to, you know, you saw it this past Monday, where they got a little bit more into the distraction, you know, almost heel New Day type stuff to get the win. Now, of course, they're definitely not heels, but they dove back into it. And the only team that could, you know, one-to-one match them up on that would be Revival. Meaning Revival would have to go to Raw, and I don't think that would be great for them, but...
No, we definitely need some more tag teams.
On SmackDown.
On SmackDown. Yes.
I feel like there's a greater chance that DIY would go to SmackDown.
How close are New Day to breaking the all-time record?
They're like within 20 some days, and I feel like it sounds like right now they're going to have them face off against a different tag team every week for a championship match every week until they break the record.
Okay.
That's the way it's looking right now.
Yeah,
which I like that. Kind of builds some excitement.
No, I like that. I like that. And
I feel ultimately they're going to break it
at this point.
Yeah, unless they just, you know, the last Monday night before, you know, before they break the record, they do like a open challenge and out comes Revival. That would be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And it'd be a pretty great heel move to have them beat New Day right there.
Yeah.
Right before the record.
The other match that we should probably spend some time talking about is Nakamura and Samoa Joe.
I don't know why you just said Nakamura's name all weird, but yeah. Again, another amazing match. Another, you know, classic put on by both those guys. It's just another match where they just beat the mess out of each other.
Yeah.
And ultimately, Joe picked up the win. I believe that's Nakamura's first loss in NXT.
That's very possible.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the case. This all leads to, I believe, that during their Australia tour live event, they're going to have a cage match, Joe and Nakamura.
Okay.
I don't know if they're going to use that as, like, this is Nakamura's official rematch clause, or if it's just because they're advertising it because it's a live event. I don't know. Also, interesting little note, Triple H sent out a tweet. They said that they did record some NXT matches before SmackDown.
Interesting.
Yeah, which they've done that before. I think one of the Dusty Rhodes classic matches. I think the one with Finn and Samoa Joe when they were teaming up last year. They did that at a SmackDown taping.
Yeah.
So I like that. Because I'm assuming they've got all these people with them for the Survivor Series weekend anyway.
Right.
So you might as well, you know, get some use out of it. And it saves you a little bit of having to tape things for, or tape things at Full Sale.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. I appreciate that. So I'm thinking that Joe is probably going to retain at this rematch, cage match thing that they're going to have.
So if Nakamura, that means Nakamura's getting called up, right? I don't mean to jump ahead of you.
Yes. I feel like this sets up for a Nakamura Royal Rumble entrant.
Okay.
Surprise. Hopefully a surprise. I don't know if I think they would be tempted to do vignettes or he's coming or whatever. But I would prefer it to be a surprise. As much as you can surprise anyone this day and age.
I would prefer her to be surprised just because I like surprises, especially in that setting. But man, if there was ever a guy who needed some vignettes.
Sure. And maybe, because also I would assume that would mean Nakamura, because I'm assuming they're probably going to do another NXT TakeOver the day before Royal Rumble. Then you have to kind of explain his absence on the NXT card. You know, unless, and this is probably the only way I would be okay with it, if they had some sort of event where the winner of which would get an entrant into the Royal Rumble the next day, then you could have Nakamura do that. It kind of takes a little bit away from the surprise aspect, but it kind of, you know, builds some momentum for him.
If you're picking Nakamura to debut at the Rumble,
yeah.
What post-Rumble, what would his first feud be in main stage WWE?
I mean, probably a mid-carder somewhere. Kind of like the day at, like, you know, right after he finished up with Sammy. The first thing he went after was Austin Aries, I believe. I wouldn't call him a mid-carder. So, like, you know, upper-tier guy. And again, it depends on what show you want him on.
Yeah.
I would say, just because he was so big on the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, just like day one, have him have a feud with Miz. And just, you know, because that would be Daniel Bryan's big, you know, payback of like, oh yeah, well, this is what you get for wrestling like a coward.
That would be interesting.
You know?
I would accept that.
And you have Nakamura just go full strong style on him.
All right.
Open up Miz's eyes a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't jump him into the main event automatically. Because you just did that with Finn Balor. And, you know, you don't want to do that too often.
Too much, yeah.
Yeah. Although Nakamura is that type of talent.
If there's another guy to do it, again, Nakamura's the guy.
Yeah.
But I understand the...
Certainly have something... If Nakamura is debuting at Royal Rumble, absolutely have something huge for him for WrestleMania, because he's got to be on your top tier of your WrestleMania card. But the time in between, do something upper mid card.
Part of the thing is Nakamura deserves the crazy elaborate nonsensical WrestleMania entrance.
Yes.
So I need him to be in a feud that's worthy of, we have to take 15 minutes for this guy to enter into the ring.
Sure. That being said, wasn't a big fan of all the violinists that were yes. The violin equivalent of lip syncing. And there was one chick in particular who was really into business for herself.
Yeah.
Like, she was hamming it up.
Because I think he might just add violinists for his ring entrances.
Sure. Because
he had one
maybe,
last time.
Maybe
now
get
four.
Or just go back to the one dude, because he played it live, and it was incredible. Just that one dude. Like, I'm okay with just that one dude coming back.
Nah, you remember when John Cena ran down the ramp with the 300 John Cenas?
Yeah, it was stupid.
Yeah, that's going to be that with violins.
I mean, I'm... Okay, see, I can only complain so much because it's Nakamura at WrestleMania. But it still is
yep.
Not great. Also, because I've decided that I've made the call that, you know, I probably won't be able to go to WrestleMania this year. If Nakamura is at WrestleMania, I'm going to be so effing pissed.
Perturbed?
Yes, because that would have been my one. That would have been my opportunity to be there for Nakamura's first WrestleMania, as well as my first WrestleMania. And I feel like now there's a very high possibility of that. That's good. I'm instantly regretting my decision, but I can't really do anything about it because I just don't have the money.
Yeah, that's where it is right now.
So if any semi-wealthy listener feels pity upon me and wants to buy me Joel, Heather, Neil, my roommate Ed, all if you want to buy all of us some WrestleMania tickets, I'm okay with that.
All right, what's making you happy?
Other than our free WrestleMania tickets that might possibly be coming our way through a very generous listener. You know what? I watched the ECW thing that they were talking a little bit about on Raw.
No.
With the authorized, unheard ECW, blah, blah, blah. It was an ECW panel. Mm-hmm. So it was just Corey Graves hosting with Paul Heyman, Tommy Dreamer, Taz. Seeing Taz on WWE TV, you know, like 7 years later, after his whole TNA thing, and just I think now he's just doing his podcast. But it kind of felt like a nice little homecoming.
Yeah.
And everyone was super comfortable. The Dudleys were there. D-Von was like all dressed nice with his glasses. It's like, oh, he's a producer now. I think that's all that were on the panel, but it was a really good panel. Okay. It didn't really have a whole lot of eye opening revelations. It was like an extended table for three, but it was like a table for six.
Yeah,
and it was really enjoyable. I watched it actually this morning while I was at work. And I enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. If anybody is on the fence about it. So that made me happy today.
All right. Good job.
What's making you happy?
Thanksgiving
is this week.
Thanksgiving this week. Very happy for that. So...
Practice Christmas.
Yeah. A week ago or so, Dave Chappelle hosted Saturday Night Live.
He did.
Really good, really solid episode. Also this week, so okay, a couple things. Side note, then after Dave Chappelle, Kristen Wiig hosted.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these people got famous for doing sketches.
Sure.
On Chappelle's show and on Saturday Night Live.
I mean, different like tiers of it, but yeah.
Yes, but they both got famous for doing sketches and doing characters in sketches.
Yes.
So Dave Chappelle has a sketch, you can look it up, where he basically plays all of his Chappelle Show characters.
Yeah, he gets it out of the way. And in a very, like, I felt like was a very, very economic way of doing it. Very smart way of doing it.
It's very well done.
Yeah.
And then Kristen Wiig, the next week's like, oh, it's Kristen Wiig highlight reel. Remember this character?
Were they all, like, in their own individual?
Yeah, they all got sketches.
Of course, because I feel like they probably did that the first couple times Will Ferrell came back.
So,
and other people.
But the thing that is making me happy with Dave Chappelle being back in the limelight, basically, Dave Chappelle, as with most stand-up comedians, the monologue was just, you get, you know, 5-10 minutes of stand-up. Go for it.
For those that can hold their own, yeah.
Right. And just watching them being like, man, it's been a lot like seeing glimpse of Killing Me Softly.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Man, I want some Dave Chappelle stand up.
Yeah.
And so.
Because, I mean, that's all he's been doing these last, what was it, 6 years, I think? That's all he's been doing is just cameras weren't rolling for any of it.
Well, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was announced today that Netflix is going to have a brand new Dave Chappelle stand-up special.
You just made my year. I did not know that.
And not only that, but you remember when you just said cameras weren't rolling? Cameras were rolling. So Netflix is not only going to have a Dave Chappelle stand-up special, but two additional already recorded Dave Chappelle stand-up specials.
Huh.
So over the next little bit, there's not been any announced release dates, but there will be three new Dave Chappelle stand-up specials on Netflix.
I have no words.
So
you again, you just made my year.
That is
holy
the
crap.
Quintessential what's making me happy.
I think my answer's BS now. comparison. Ugh, get out of here, ECW.
I mean, well, yeah, you kept it in the wrestling thing on a wrestling podcast. Good for you.
Ugh, I hate my answer now. Gross. Now I'm depressed. This is what was making me happy is now making me depressed.
No. You're just more happy now. That's how making you happy works.
And also, like, just, you know, quick, like, more, like, kind of, well, not personal, but also we're making plans for my annual movie marathon that we do, like, around New Year's every year. Well, now it's the second year. But just talking about that, because we have a theme, like, everyone's going to be picking their, what they think is the best sci-fi movie made since the year 2000. And just, you know, debating all these things and talking about all this stuff with all of you guys. It's been fun. And so I'm... And Joel's phone is playing. Joel's playing with his phone during my answer because I'm that boring. Thank you, guys.
I was trying to check something.
And let's go ahead and just start the freaking plugs.
As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CRentire, where we live tweet Mondays, Sundays, and et cetera, et cetera.
This would be a great time if I had a soundboard.
I know, you tried so quick. I was like, I mean, it's your turn.
I mean, the only one I've got is my turn down for what, and I feel like that would probably get a send for copyright. My turn down for what button? Effing, what am I on?
As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CR.
You already did that, you dumb.
Apparently I had to do it again, so you knew where we were.
You have any questions, comments, anything you want us to bring up on the show? If you want to send any Joel hate mail, you can just please, I will gladly accept that over at our email.
There's
that's
no such thing.
classroomattire@gmail.com.
We are also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast. Get new episodes. You thought I was going to mess up, didn't you?
You're a prick. Damn it. It's a miracle.
Easy way to follow the podcast. Get new episodes every week. If you want to give us a rating of...
Shut up.
5.
Shut
stars.
Up.
Stars. Then you can do that there. It's an easy way to help out the podcast with iTunes metrics. Or leave a comment.
If you want. If you're listening to us on InsideFaults.com, leave us a comment on there. I would love to hear from you. Joel probably wants you to die in a fire.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Easy way to follow myself. See what other kind of things we're working on.
Sure.
Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.